women, ladies and gals. Gals, not girls. Do you know what a gal is? Ridiculous. Women, daughter. What did you say? Women, daughters and gals. Women, ladies and gals.
In this book it is written.
And just what's there? Fuck you and your book.
It tells how Simplicius Gallus left his wife, and for all time, because she went out into the streets bareheaded just once. Oh. And Eve, with her perversity, has led all men to misery and Christ to the cross.
Oh, no!
Xantippe now. Why, she poured the piss pot over Socrates' head. And a silly man wipes his head and dares only say, before the thunder cease, down comes the rain.
Welcome to Bin Rose Right, episode 3. Tonight we are going to be talking about what could be fairly controversial given our different positions on the subject. We're going to talk about women in Doctor Who, men's attitude to women in Doctor Who, men's attitude to the writing, the companions, some women writers. You can jump in anytime you like.
No, you're doing fine.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about my wrestling with the fact that some of my dislike for certain female companions may be latent misogyny and may be part of my upbringing, the fact that I'm an unreconstructed 70s person, and maybe the reason why I dislike Amy, or the characterisation of Amy, is because of misogyny and not liking strong women. I don't think it's the case. But when you hear some commentary on it, you can't help but detect a certain bias that comes from the gender of the person speaking about it, I think.
Fair enough. So why don't you start off by telling me and our listeners why you hate women?
I don't hate women.
Just me then.
Yeah, just women. Well, it's, okay. Well, here's the thing. This is one of the reasons why I think I might have the misogyny gene. Is that one of my dad's favourite jokes is, why do women wear makeup and perfume?
Because they're ugly and they smell.
That's the one. Yeah. So if you can imagine being brought up in that kind of atmosphere where that was considered to be funny, then maybe it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination to think there may be some kind of latent dislike for strong female characters in drama, in that they may be, I don't know, I'm going to find it quite difficult to articulate, because I do find it difficult. I think it's something that is difficult to speak about without coming across as some kind of wet liberal or special pleading. I don't know. It's like, am I trying to apologise? Do I recognise it in myself? Yeah, I do sometimes. I mean, I can remember thinking, watching Amy speaking to the doctor and thinking, oh, you're such a rude cow. Now, there, calling a woman a cow, I think, is shows a kind of unthinking misogyny. You know, is that you are actually, it's a gendered insult. You wouldn't call a man a cow.
But I look at, yes, it is a gendered insult, but I think it's perfectly acceptable not to like characters. And if the insult that trips off your tongue happens to be something that's considered gender specific, then maybe that is an indication of your own inherent misogyny, maybe not. I mean, I have a similar thing with Martha Jones. I can't bear her for quite the opposite reason. I just think she's so incredibly wet. And I think of her as this simpering, pie-eyed.
Yeah.
Now, but they affront to femininity.
See, that's the thing. That's the reason when it first occurred to me that that might be, I might have these kind of these ideas which I haven't really fully examined, because I did like Martha. And the reason why I like Martha is because she's simpering and wet and she's not a threat. And I didn't like Amy because she's the opposite, that she's angry and forthright and doesn't suffer fools gladly. Or is it that she's whiny and self-centred and, you know... I mean, also admit that Rory, I don't like Rory either because I thought he was an ineffectual twat, but...
But could it just be that you don't like Amy Pond because of the character in itself and not because she's a woman? I mean, how do you feel about Donna Noble?
Oh, I love Donna.
Well, she's great. She's a great, strong female character. What about Barbara?
Barbara? I've not seen enough of the First Doctor to be able to... Well, certainly not before... Not in my adulthood.
Okay, Liz Shaw or Sarah Jane Smith?
Sarah Jane Smith.
Not pick one, I mean, in terms of strong female characters who are independent and intelligent.
Love Sarah as well, you know. Doctor Who was my doctor that I was, you know, 90, as I said in the last podcast, if you pricked up your ears, I was six in 1970 and then did the maths to work out that I was 16 in 1980, which I thought was a feat of amazing...
Yeah, you did maths at university,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, but I didn't do arithmetic. Mm. So Sarah Jane was my, well, not my companion, but the companion that I had the most time for. But then I think between the age of 10 and 16, didn't think of it as in terms of, that's a woman, you know.
That's a big thing to miss.
You are, yeah, I know, but it's
the,
like,
lumps on the front kind of give it away.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, for fuck's sake. Hello. Hi, Mum. Yeah, I'm alright.
Practically every great leader was a man whose achievements were largely inspired by a woman. When things get tough, and you can count on it they will, you may be deserted by what you thought were friends. But if you've got a good woman, you'll never be alone.
We had to stop recording, yeah. Because ironically, Disc Grinder just got a call from his mum.
Yes, she's very well.
So... On to misogyny.
there's the irony. Clearly, I'm not a misogynist at all because I love my mum.
Because you love your mum.
Yeah, although, yeah.
So we got to the fact that you don't like Amy Pond.
We've addressed that, but... Well, have we, though? Because, you see, the thing is, it's like when you investigate it and you work out the reason why you don't, and you actually think about it, you go like, well, no, you're daft because... I mean, I have rewatched some of the episodes where I thought she was particularly irritating, and then I watched The Girl Who Waited, and my opinion changed completely because I thought that was a tour de force.
It's funny you should mention The Girl Who Waited. I'll get onto that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Girl Who Waited is an interesting one.
All right. Interesting.
Although I do agree with a lot of critics that 40 years is kind of insignificant compared to how long Rory waits for her, and she should really stop pissing and moaning about it.
Well, yeah, it was 2,000 years, but he was an Auton.
Yeah.
Maybe they just don't have the same, you know, emotional response because he's made out of plastic.
But let's get back to your original theory of your upbringing and your cultural background being a source of latent misogyny and that colouring how you view women, especially on Doctor Who.
1970s, growing up in the 1970s, in probably what was the most misogynist decade in modern times. I mean, you could say that as well, that's a lot of bollocks, isn't it?
I'd go maybe 40s or 50s, or anything before that at all.
Anything, so any time before
the 70s when feminism became a big movement.
Ah, see, now that's the thing, is like I'm saying misogyny in this kind of... reaction against.
As a recognised term, rather than in the 40s and 50s, it was perfectly acceptable.
That was it. Yeah, yeah. It was like you gloss over the deeply problematic racism in certain Hollywood movies because you go, yeah, that was the thing then. And I'm not agreeing that you should gloss over it, but there are people who do that, who go, well, that was, you know, casual racism was the thing, and that's okay. No, of course it's not okay. But in the 1970s, because it became... or 60s, it became a topic for people to militate against, so you could have a position of being somebody. Like the thing that we get nowadays with the political... Well, I mean, it's a bit of a... old subject now, but political correctness gone mad. The whole point about political correctness was there are certain things that you shouldn't say. Not that you shouldn't say, that they kind of define the way you think about people, because language is a very powerful thing. If, for example, in my background, one of the things that I did in the early 80s was a lot of art therapy for people with disabilities. Now, saying they are people with disabilities is different to saying they are disabled, because a disability is a thing you have, not something that you are. So some people would say, well, that's a bit, that's shilly-shallying, that's political correctness gone, you know, not mad, but it's a very powerful thing to be able to characterise people by things that they have rather than the person that they are. I know I'm sounding like a wet liberal now, but and I'm going to chunter on about this, but you know, I do think that the way that you talk about people can be very powerful and very dismissive, and that in the 1970s, when you had people reacting against women's libbers, you know, it wasn't a thing. It became an enemy. Maybe that's what it is. And it became a recognised... You could have a position of being anti-women's lib or anti-feminist as if that was... And we'll come on to your bête noire soon. As that was a defensible position, do you think that women were inferior? Nobody thinks that nowadays, do they?
So now that we've discussed the political climate of the 70s in general, what about you and Doctor Who?
Me and Doctor Who? So 1970s, I took a bit of a holiday from Doctor Who from 1983 onwards. Watched the 1996 movie we discussed. There was a discussion about the fact that the Eighth Doctor kisses the...
I think it's best for everybody if we keep Grace out of this.
Yeah, well, Grace gets kissed by the Doctor without her permission.
I think it's best for everybody if we keep Grace out of this. So misogyny in Doctor Who.
Yeah. So, yeah, am I just working through my problems with women? Is that what it is?
I don't know. You tell me.
No, I'm not. I'm just... We were discussing it. I had a problem with Amy... I didn't have a problem with Martha, and then I thought to myself, well, why? What is it about those two people? What is the difference between them? Is it that I don't feel threatened by Martha, but I do feel threatened by Amy? And then I just thought, what a lot of shite. No, of course, I don't threaten by either, because they are fictional characters in a science fiction show. There's a bit of a nothing subject, really, if I get to the end of it and go, no, everything's fine. I'm top. Yeah. But yeah, I think the nail on the head was when you kind of interrogated it and said, well, what do you think about Donna? If I was going to get at all kind of my cock in a twist about powerful women, then Donna should have been the one that did it. But I love Donna to bits. Maybe it's a class thing as well. Maybe I found Amy a bit whiny middle class and Donna... a bit powerful working class, and maybe that is stereotypical thinking as well.
And that's why I'm sitting here in full riot gear to protect myself from your from your inherent rage against women of my kind.
Yes.
I mean, with Amy particularly, I have mixed feelings. It's easy for someone to assume that a small, dumpy Eastern European woman would have problems with the beautiful, lithe giraffe girl. But that's really quite far from it. I find her characterisation, as we said, The Girl Who Waited, I think is a fantastic episode if you're talking about strong female role models.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, she kind of... ruins it by whinging and getting really resentful about how long she's had to wait.
Right.
You've done so well looking after yourself. Come on.
Well, but, I mean, maybe that was it's that one of the criticisms of Amy's character is that she's very self-absorbed and everything has to revolve around her, and that the people in her life are just adjuncts to her, the story that she's, you know, running in.
Much like the Doctor.
I don't know, see, because I think Matt Smith's Doctor at that point was a bit of a clown and a bit of a... I mean, I would have said... I think... Well, I don't know.
I'm not saying Matt Smith's Doctor. I'm saying in some incarnations, the Doctor has been not only a narcissist, but a megalomaniac. And therefore, it's always been... The world revolves around the Doctor and his companions are just along for the ride, which is very much an old... I mean, a lot of people have said how classic Doctor Who is very much the Doctor's story, and he's just got some companions along to advance the narrative. Whereas since 2005, when it came back, it's been the first episode being called Rose. It's Rose's story. It's Martha's story. It's Donna Noble's story. It's Amy Pond's story. It's the companion story and how the Doctor has shown them these wonderful things. But that's a discussion for another day, I think.
Well, it's another thing. It's like Rose. Loved Rose. And I love the dynamic between Rose and Christopher Eccleston's Doctor. Maybe, actually, what I'm working out is it's a class thing. Is that I don't like middle-class, whiny women.
Well, I don't like whiny...
Hey, misogyny, hello.
I don't like whiny women.
No.
Class doesn't really come into it for me. But then again, to me, Martha is the middle-class whiny woman. And she's the one you like.
Yeah. Or did she just pass me by, really? Is that she was nothing... one of the things that I thought about was going to be a talking point, but probably isn't at the moment, is that there were certain parts of Amy's run where I thought, it's the Amy show. And that's what I did. I didn't want the Amy show. I wanted the Doctor show.
But I think for the last 9 years we've had the companion show. But again, that's not for today.
No,
that's not what we're talking about. So we were going to talk about your latent misogyny, but somehow we've managed to circumvent that and decide that you're not a misogynist.
No, I'm just. I don't know. I mean, that's not for me to say. But you know, I had this suspicion that I am. And it was being expressed by my dislike for certain character traits as portrayed by Doctor Who companions, you know. But then I look back on it and I think, right, so for example, out of Tegan and Nyssa, loved Tegan, didn't like Nyssa. But then I think that's because Nyssa was underused, really, and was and did have a little bit of the fluffy bunniness going on. And
definitely.
I don't like fluffy bunniness. Doctor, help me, shut up, just do it, you know. Although Nyssa in a couple of episodes was quite you know, the linchpin. I forget which one, but there was one other than the bits when she buggered off to the TARDIS to have a sleep.
She wasn't completely useless the whole time. She was, you know, she had her uses.
But isn't that because Eric Star Wars didn't know how to write for more than three people at any one time? And that he would have to get one of the companions to go and get knocked out, or go and have a sleep, or...
Well, there's a can of worms.
Yes.
Well, it's funny you mention script editors and writers, because Stephen Moffat gets a lot of flack.
Yeah.
For supposedly being a misogynist, especially in direct comparison to Russell T Davies, and a lot of former writers have, I think, unfairly come under the same criticism. And people talk a lot about how Doctor Who doesn't do justice to women. And my immediate response to that is, Doctor Who is not the forum for advancement of the feminist cause. It's
right.
It's a television show,
yeah,
for entertainment purposes. And a lot of people also complain that Stephen Moffat can't write female characters.
Mm.
I disagree,
right,
personally. I have no problem with how his female characters are drawn in general.
Right. Just that you don't like them very much.
That's not true.
All right.
I don't think that's the case either.
Mm.
I think he's as good at writing female characters as he is at writing male characters. For someone to say that Amy Pond or Clara Oswald isn't, or Jenny isn't, a believable female character, it's a character who happens to be female, in the same way that not every man can possibly identify with Rory or Danny Pink or one of the other male characters. Mm. He's writing characters, and I don't think it should matter whether they're male or female. Well, that's another point I was going to make. People talk about how patronised female characters were in classic Doctor Who, but if anything, Harry Sullivan was condescended to by the Fourth Doctor far more than Sarah Jane ever was.
Yeah. But wasn't that one of the recent tropes is male as buffoon? Is a kind of advertising trope as well. Is like the male is the stupid man who has to be looked after and controlled by the strong female character.
Well, I think Mickey certainly comes under that.
Yeah.
But then.
Yeah, and Roy Castle and Bernard Cribbins in the Doctor Who movies, and Harry, and Rory, and what male companion?
I think Rory is under the thumb, but that's a product of his undying love for Amy. He's certainly not a buffoon. He's certainly not incapable.
I watched and really enjoyed it again just recently because I was doing a bit of a reprise of Matt Smith era just to see whether, because my boys basically say that they didn't like seasons 6 and 7 because they thought the writing was too complex and there wasn't any emotional kind of bite to it. Well, this is my eldest son Cass who's basically saying, oh no, I didn't like it, I couldn't follow it and I didn't identify with anybody. But he's really loving season 8 because he's really latching on to the characterisation. Excuse me. One of the things that you just said, though, which I thought was quite interesting, was irrespective of whether you like the female characters in Moffat's tenure, are they well drawn? Are they female? Are they women? Or are they caricatures of sassy types? You know, are they... Because you can, and people have said they get tired of the sassy, snippy dialogue and the entertaining kind of like, ooh, when you... And kind of the wit in there, and that's unrealistic. But
the women aren't the only ones doing that.
No.
And it's... You could level the same criticism at something like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in which all of the characters...
That's interesting, you know, like...
I mean, Xander, for example, is possibly the most sassy female character in that.
Yeah.
When you look at the dialogue, comparing it to the dialogue that people are criticising in Doctor Who.
Is Xander the demon one?
No, he's the boy one.
Oh, the bloke, yeah. Yeah, not a huge follower of Buffy.
That really has been off the air for quite some time.
Just wheedling.
But... I think if you look at the companions in Doctor Who over the years, obviously there are more female companions than male. And whether that's because the show decided it was best to have a male-female dynamic or not, I don't think is for us to discuss now. Certainly, the male companions drop off once we have a Doctor who's capable of defending himself. Ian and Stephen and Ben were the young bucks who were there to do the heavy lifting for William Hartnell, who, although he did pick up a rock and try to kill a caveman,
which was the crap one out of the first Doctors? When was it, Zoe?
Dodo.
Who started off being
Zoe was the second Doctor and one of my favourite companions of all time.
Oh yeah, that's got it. So I get mixed up with Dodo.
How dare you?
Well, no, I was just, you know, two syllables.
Dodo was utterly pointless, yeah.
Yeah, but she started off working class, didn't she? And then she had to go to Received English. Is it called Received English? No. Is it RP? Oh, I forget what it is. It's the BBC English. She had, in the first episode or series, she was working class. And then in the second outing, she was now... Received pronunciation. Ah, I don't know. But yeah, and then you got Victoria, who was a fluffy bunny.
Again, Victoria is the second Doctor. But yes, I mean, I'm not going to say that there haven't been female companions who have been there purely to be tied to the railway tracks and squeam till they're thick. But yeah.
Good Bonnie Langford reference there, liking that one from Just William. You know, yeah.
Yeah, that Thanks for signposting it.
Well, I'm signposting that to people who might not know, because one of the things that we did say is we're not going to assume that everybody knows all of the cultural references that we're making, because of our vast audience of people who don't like Doctor Who, you know, because we're so popular.
So, I mean, on that point, Mel was something of a screamer.
Yes.
On TV, certainly, although she's really come into her own in Big Finish audios.
Yeah.
Susan, much as we all love her, was Deus Ex sprained ankle the whole time.
Yes, even to the extent that was one of her major plot points, well, not even plot points, the thing that she did in The Five Doctors was to trip over.
And sprain her ankle, yeah.
And then Sarah falling down the slightly inclined slope as well.
But it's great. But Barbara was fantastic. She was a strong woman. She was one of the first companions and a very strong, very intelligent, very forthright woman.
Yes.
And it's not as though she was sitting there deferring to Ian and the Doctor the whole time.
Yeah.
Sarah Kingdom, as misguided as she might have been, whether you consider her a companion or not, again, a very strong and forthright woman. Mm. So strong that in the strength of her convictions, because she believed it was the right thing, so she killed her own brother.
Mm. Is that Brett Vial?
Yeah.
Right. The Brig, as came up next.
Yeah. Victoria Waterfield's a bit of a non-entity. She's a
Victoria Wood. Didn't know she was in
Waterfield, I said. But then you get Zoe, who I would call probably the most intelligent person ever to travel in the TARDIS with the Doctor. Even smarter than Romana, I think.
First or second? Romana. Because Mary Tam left after a season because she thought she was getting stereotyped, didn't she?
I'm talking about characters here in terms of intellect and education and just general intellectual ability. Zoe was, to me, the smartest person to travel with the Doctor.
Right.
So much so that it was even highlighted in the Crotons.
Yes.
There's that wonderful bit where after she's put the machine on her head and said, oh, the Crotons were very happy with me. When the Doctor tries it, he calls her over and says, show me how to work this thing. Oh, actually, no, I've worked it out. Go away.
Oh, they're doing it in square roots. Oh, you're working in square roots. Yeah.
But you know, Zoe just automatically knows how to work that machine because she's so, so smart. Tiny, adorable little button of a woman, but ridiculously intelligent. Again, Nis is a...
What about Liz Shaw?
Again, Liz Shaw was next on my list because she's the next female companion.
See what we're doing there.
Yeah.
Chronology, yay.
Liz Shaw, unfortunately, only had one season run, but she was a highly intelligent woman.
Mm.
Jo Grant, whilst perhaps not the most academic of companions, had some smarts.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Jane, that resourceful go-getter. You know, we've got some...
She did a bit of screaming.
Yeah. But she did... She did complain near the end of her run that she felt she was just there to say yes, doctor, no, doctor.
Mm.
But early on, even though John Pertwee's perhaps one of the more sexist of doctors...
Yeah.
She was a strong, independent woman.
Mm.
It was great. And Leela, the savage... Who was there for the dads in her loincloth?
Aquamarina. Leela. She didn't. Reference,
she wasn't scared of anyone. You know, there are some incredible women in classic Doctor Who.
Are we actually saying?
And I think it's
then,
deeply unfair to level accusations of misogyny against it. Yes, yeah, sometimes the Doctor may say things, or other characters may say things that are condescending, but.
Oh, there's a code word for misogyny in there that you hear a lot in current crop of criticism, when they'll call something problematic, which is such a fucking weasel word for what you're actually saying is you've got a problem because you think this is sexist. You know, like the problematic kiss that Matt Smith lays on Jenny in The Crimson Horror, you know, because it wasn't with permission. And she smacks him one, and that's appropriate that she smacked him one, but it was inappropriate for him to kiss her. you know, without permission. Well, yeah, it is. And that was called problematic. Well, you know.
But that's not problematic because it's some kind of misogyny. That's problematic. No, but it's not misogyny. It's people complain about it because it's perceived sexual harassment, not misogyny.
Oh, okay.
You know, we're getting close to the R word there. That's not...
Okay, what's the R word? Oh, that. All right, okay.
So, I think that's neither here nor there in this discussion.
Okay.
But...
Do
think it's unfair to call Doctor Who, old or new, misogynistic. I don't think it misrepresents women. Mm. Yes, it's very easy to say... women aren't written properly because there aren't any women writers, and there have only been 4 credited female writers in the history of Doctor Who, one of whom didn't actually write it,
mm-hmm.
and was only credited because her husband wrote it and insisted that she be credited too,
because she made all the tea
for reasons that have never become clear. Yeah. Wow, I'll go and darn some socks in the kitchen for a bit, if you like. Leslie Scott's the first person to receive a writing credit,
mm-hmm.
First female to receive a writing credit on Doctor Who, and she didn't write it.
Oh, it's that kind of Leslie.
That kind of Leslie, yes. Yeah. And then Barbara Clegg actually wrote some, and then, of course, Pip and Jane Baker.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Jane Baker. But there's only been one female writer in modern Doctor Who, which is Helen Rayner.
Really?
Yeah.
And what did she
Unless
write?
Please tell us if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
She wrote The Daleks in Manhattan, an Evolution of the Daleks.
Which was
and
bollocks.
Then she wrote the Sontaran Stratagem. She hasn't written my favourites.
Mm. Oh, I don't know. I like Daleks in Manhattan. I mean, there's some great set pieces in that, and there's a lovely bit, and there's lots of lovely bits, but there's some absolute bollocks in it as well.
So I think
it was never my point that Doctor Who was misogynistic.
No, I know it wasn't. That was my discussion. Your discussion was whether you're a misogynist or not.
Yeah, I think we've kind of.
I'm trying to defend Stephen Moffat against his
detractors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Detractors being worse than B tractors or C tractors. Mm. yes. Well, there is that whole trope about every. And this is wrong, actually, to say, is that every female villain in New Who is a business-suited woman with glasses. So you've got Madame... Well, it wasn't
Madame... Cara Braxos.
Who wasn't, who had very kind of, like, flowing locks and a big caftan or whatever it was. It was her clone who was the black-suited dominatrix. And then you've got the one with the one who used to be in Coronation Street with the little tubby things. Yeah.
The adipose,
the little tubby things.
Sarah Lancashire.
Sarah Lancashire, yeah, she black suited. But then that's bollocks because then you've got Diana Rigg, who was the archetypal classic Who villain, transplanted into New Who, absolute lunatic with pretensions towards kind of religious fanaticism and all that. That's not a stereotyped women in a business suit. And then you've got what's her face in the one with the Wi-Fi. First one in series 7. I can't remember her name. It was the one where the Wi-Fi got taken over, and the Celia Imrie. Being told to shut the fuck up now.
Yeah, you have no idea what you're talking about.
I do, because you don't know who Celia Imrie is.
I know who Celia Imrie is.
Season opener.
I know she's... I don't think you're talking about season 7's opener.
Oh, because that was the twats of Akatan, wasn't it?
It was another Miss K.
It was, yeah. The Bells of St. John. There you go, the one with Clara on the motorbike.
It was episode 3.
Episode 3.
That's
so
why I got confused when you started going
on
about
season
openers. When
I said
season
opener, I meant episode 3. It's an easy mistake to make. They're spelt the same.
I don't think we need to get down into the fact that women in business suits with glasses seem to come up. Yes, we've got spider women as well, and Diana Rigg.
I'm not saying that's a criticism. I'm saying that's a criticism that has been said.
Yeah, and
in a number
are
of
wrong.
Times you're saying, yeah, I'm just saying people were wrong.
So the point I'm trying to make is the detractors of Stephen Moffat who say he's a misogynist
mm-hmm.
are talking out of their arses.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, earlier this year, I discovered this through an article in a widely read liberal British newspaper, which linked to an infographic that was doing the rounds.
Oh, Christ, look at that. Is Doctor Who sexist?
There is
the Betteridge Law. Betteridge Law. Any
Bechdel test?
Not the Bechdel test. The Betteridge Law is that any internet article that opens with a question, the answer is usually no.
Well, this isn't... This is an infographic that's drawn from a...
It'll be in the show notes.
Not if I can help it. I don't want to give this woman any more traffic.
It won't be in the show notes.
It's pegged as an academic study, right, by an undergraduate, an unaccredited...
As opposed to any other kind of study.
Well, by an undergraduate,
right,
at an unaccredited university in, yeah, America that happens to be run by the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints.
The Mormons.
No comment.
Yeah. The Mermaids.
Yeah. So, as an undergraduate, she had to do a project for her media course.
Yeah.
And she decided to watch every episode of Doctor Who from 2005 to what was, at the time, the end of Amy Pond.
Yeah.
And checked to see whether each episode passed the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
And also keep a running count of female companion speaking time.
Right.
So the breakdown is 100% of Donna Noble's episodes passed the Bechdel test. Well done.
Wow.
And Rose and Martha have 74% and 78% respectively.
Right.
Whereas Amy gets a measly 53%,
mm-hmm,
which, as far as she's concerned, indicates, and I quote, that writing has taken a nosedive.
Right.
In Stephen Moffat's
a nosedive
time.
Not a muff dive. Sorry. Yeah, there's some more cuttage going on.
Well, that's a problematic phrase to use.
So when we were saying that I'm not a misogynist, and I tried and worked out that I actually wasn't, I've just fucked that one, haven't I?
So this study,
yeah,
which did the rounds on...
You did air quotes then, didn't you? This study.
Well,
you can hear them.
You
broadcast.
Can see my hands. I, yeah, didn't. Yeah. This particular piece of work,
yeah,
which is irrefutable proof that Stephen Moffat is apparently worse to women than Russell T Davies was,
mm-hmm,
is absolute bullshit. And I'm going to explain why.
Yes, please do.
The first criteria that was used was the Bechdel test.
Right. Yeah, could you explain what the Bechdel test
is? I shall.
Because I'd never heard it until you told me what it was.
Well, the Bechdel test springs from a comic strip that was written by a militant feminist cartoonist.
Mm-hmm.
In which she explains how she will only watch films that meet a certain criteria.
Right.
Which is that there are two women, mm-hmm, in it. And over time, this has evolved to being two women who have names.
Yeah.
They must have a conversation at some point during the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be about something other than a man.
Right. Can I just stop you there? Because I'm going to point out a logical paradox, or even a paradox, a fallacy,
yeah,
in this argument. She will only watch a film that has two females in it with names who speak about somebody who's not a man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How does she know beforehand that she's going to watch the film? So she has a taster. She's got a royal taster who goes and watches the films on her behalf to check whether there are two women who have names talking about something other than a man. Okay, that's already problematic.
Moving on.
Moving swiftly on. That's going to be the catchphrase for this.
In the last 20 plus years, Alison Bechdel, who came up with the test, has actually come clean and said she thinks this has gone too far.
Right.
My first problem with the Bechdel test being used as an indicator for Doctor Who,
yeah,
is that it initially, well, apart from being entirely satirical,
mm-hmm,
applies to films and not television shows, which have an arc over however many episodes of
a series.
Oh,
hang on a minute. When you say this is entirely satirical, do you mean she was taking a piss when she said this?
Well, maybe entirely satirical is unfair, but there was a satirical element to the comic strip. She wasn't...
Oh, right, cool. Because some people genuinely think that's a problem.
But some people have latched onto it, and it is frequently used by people to denigrate cinematic works and claim that they are in some way misogynistic or harmful to women.
I mean, one thing that we need to point out, right, is that Doctor Who is about an alien with two hearts. For all we know, he hasn't got a cock. So it could be the case that when they're talking about the Doctor, they're not talking about a man. They're talking about a Gallifreyan.
They're talking about a character who appears as a man. And we can talk about the Doctor's gender.
Oh, I like that. Yes, yeah, so a character who appears as a man. Especially with and the his... I am not your boyfriend comment. Because I love that about Pete. Sorry, I'm talking over you. I'm doing a man thing. I'll stop. No, but it's the case, you know. Like the Doctor is not a man; he's an alien. He's got two hearts.
But you're referring to him as he right now.
I know, because it doesn't sound, you know.
Well, I mean, if you want to get into it, Alpha Centauri.
Yeah. Oh, what gender is Alpha Centauri?
Well, no, it's explicitly said it's neither.
Mm.
Alpha Centauri is a hermaphroditic entity, but
who looks like a big green cock.
Yes, but they decide to refer to Alpha Centauri as him just for ease.
Oh, I like that.
So whether or not that's the Doctor is not the point. This totally irrelevant piece of work that some teenage girl did at her unaccredited university, which was latched onto by numerous newspapers and lots of people online as a brilliant piece of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
To support the claim that Stephen Moffat is a misogynist, explicitly says that it doesn't use The Girl Who Waited.
Oh, right. In it. Okay, so we're going to ignore that.
Amy doesn't have a conversation with another named female character. Yes, there is another female voice in it of a robot.
Right, but that's not
or a robot character. Or a computer.
Yeah.
But it's not a named explicitly female character, it's a computer. That happens to have the voice
clearly
of a woman.
Clearly that doesn't count. I mean, doesn't count.
So, Amy, who is on her own throughout this episode, automatically fails the Bechdel test.
Ah!
However, she spends the episode kicking ass.
Yeah.
So, this girl has said, oh, I left that one out because she kicks ass in it.
Because it doesn't agree with my hypothesis.
People who disagree with the Bechdel test have said that gravity, for example, which I haven't seen, but I know enough about to know why it doesn't pass the Bechdel test, is proof that the Bechdel test is useless.
Well, that it was based on satire, I mean, which I never knew, because I'd heard this thing called, you told me about the Bechdel test, and I thought it was a genuine piece of academic insight.
No, it's a cartoon.
And it's a fucking cartoon.
It's a cartoon.
Brilliant.
It's a comic strip.
Yeah.
So this breakdown that says that 53% of Amy Pond's episodes from seasons 5 to 7 passed the test, not including The Girl Who Waited, but 100% of Donna Noble's episodes in season 4 pass. Bully for that. It means nothing as far as I'm concerned. And yes, it's entirely plausible that there will be two female characters who do have who have names and do have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But then fail at the final hurdle because they have a discussion about a man if you're calling the Doctor a man. Because they are invariably in a situation that is somehow predicated on a mutual experience of meeting the Doctor and knowing the Doctor. Yeah. And him being probably an authority figure in this situation, or the cause of the problem, or the person that brought them there.
I was going to make an asinine comment then, which would...
Well, don't hold back, you usually do.
Yeah, which would be, all the Daleks are women. And that they... And then I just realised, actually, they discuss the Doctor kind of without... That's all they talk about, pretty much.
But they're not named, so it doesn't count.
Oh, damn it!
In the same way that plenty of, you know, the Cybermen...
They're
plenty
women.
Of women have been... Plenty
Sontarans
of women have
women.
Been... plenty of women have, you know, been subject to cyber conversion. It's right. Entirely plausible that... When some Cybermen are interacting, two of them were originally women who had names and discussing something else.
That's something that's just occurred to me as well. That's quite interesting. It's very rarely do you see, because you could have a Bechdel test for monsters, is that very rarely do you get monsters talking to each other. They're always talking to, I don't know where I'm going.
Well, Daleks do.
Do they?
Daleks communicate with each other verbally quite a lot.
Yeah. Cybermen don't. Oh, they do. Excellent. You must.
Well, there's a hive mind there anyway. So who needs chatting when you've got a hive mind? But my point being that a great deal of criticism has been pinned on a totally worthless in air quotes, study.
No, I don't think that because I think I agree with you entirely. It's totally worthless. We don't have to put it in quotes. It is totally worthless. You have completely destroyed any worth in that while speaking.
I also would like to know why it's a problem for people that even if it is true that women are misrepresented on Doctor Who, why is that a problem? Why should young girls need a role model in Doctor Who? Mm. If young girls enjoy watching science fiction, I think that's fantastic. If older girls enjoy watching science fiction, if young men, if older men, if anyone enjoys watching science fiction, good for them. They enjoy something. Yeah. They should be open to it. They should be allowed to enjoy that freely.
Yes.
They shouldn't need to have a role model for life within that. And
you were saying this earlier about that you should never have rules for enjoyment.
No.
You should never apply your rules for the way you enjoy something to somebody else.
Some people enjoy baked beans. I personally think they're repulsive.
Yeah.
That doesn't diminish other people's enjoyment or the validity of that person's enjoyment of baked beans.
Yeah, that's right. It's a lot of the opinions that you see trotted out in this debate should be prefaced with the internet acronym IMHO, in my humble opinion. And that kind of goes, yeah, that's your opinion, great. There are a lot of people who state as fact that, oh, this is bad. That's your opinion. You think that's bad, in your opinion. You think Doctor Who is sexist, in your opinion. Is it sexist? Well, this study says it is, but we've already kind of demonstrated quite conclusively that it was a lot of shite. Sorry.
No, that's fine. My other problem with people complaining that the female characters on Doctor Who aren't good role models because they're just sassy caricatures is that I don't want my role models personally to be fictional. I don't feel that... And if they are fictional,
yeah.
I don't think they need to be female. I don't think the fact that I share a common physiology with Clara Oswald means that I should pick her as a role model over, say, the Doctor.
Wow.
In his morality. Why can't my role models be male because I'm a girl?
I like that.
And if I do want a female role model from Doctor Who,
yeah,
I'd probably pick Verity Lambert.
Because going back to your thing about I am speechless. I think that's such a good point. Should break for a minute. That's brilliant.
And on that note,
yeah,
I think we should wind up on possibly the hottest potato of all.
Yeah.
What about a woman playing the Doctor?
Yay! Absolutely, bring it on.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Fucking fantastic. I don't think it will fly. I think there's too much inertia. I don't think it's going to happen now, but I for one, welcome our new female overlords.
And do you agree with some people that you would need a female writer to realise a female Doctor?
No.
Okay.
No, I think you'd need a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a very good writer.
I think you need a good writer for Doctor Who, full stop. I think you're doing a disservice to Doctor Who if you've got bad writers in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why should it matter if it's a woman or a man? And I'm going to agree with you in part, but not entirely. I don't think it's necessary to have a female Doctor. I don't have a problem with the fact that if the Doctor continues to be played by male actors in perpetuity, that really doesn't bother me, and no. I don't feel like I'm...
Well, going back to that lovely point you just made before about the fact that I want to identify with a strong character, irrespective of whether it's male or female. Why? Because I share physiology. I think it's just such a top point. Worth saying twice, which is why I have.
Fair enough. I think whilst it could be interesting to have a woman playing the Doctor if it's well written, I'd hope that the stories wouldn't be any different just to facilitate some feminine aspects of the personality.
I forget, there was some guy on a there's some podcast, I think it may even have been Diddly Dump, where they...
the only podcast we ever reference.
Yeah, the only podcast that we ever reference, because, you know, brothers from another mother and sisters from another aunt. Where are we going? There was this comment made that during a regeneration, the doctor can regrow and be who he wants to be. He's chosen to be who he wants. That we've already been shown that with Romana's regeneration.
Well, with Romana's regeneration, she comes out blue.
Where you can try out little things. And somebody had this idea that you could do a season of 12 episodes with 12 different doctors, because it's during that regeneration period. So each doctor could be a cameo. So you could have each doctor played by, say, Helen Mirren. Well, not each one, but you could have a Helen Mirren. You could have a Johnny Depp. You know, you could do all the fan service. You could do all of the awful things that people have suggested in the past. Like, I reckon a great American doctor would be Jeff Goldblum. So
Jeff Goldblum is... I love Jeff Goldblum. He's done some great stuff with Tim and Eric. I have four words for you.
Mm-hmm.
Curse of Fatal Death.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, where Jim Broadbent was the best doctor on
he
that.
He was. Yeah, he really was. And Richard E. Grant...
Who wrote the Curse of Fatal Death?
It was Stephen Moffat.
Fatal Death.
Although it does mean that Richard E. Grant has been the doctor twice now.
Three times? Shudder. No, Curse of the Shalker.
Scream of the Shalker, that's what I meant.
Oh, did you? Oh, sorry.
That's twice. Curse of Fatal Death, Scream of the Shalker. What's the third one?
Twice.
So, neither of us are opposed to a female doctor, neither of us feel the need for a female doctor.
No, because as I said, he's got two hearts and no cock.
And I think that probably wraps up our lady episode. but if you want to talk to us, God knows why.
Please don't.
You can find us on Twitter at BinRoseWright.
Yay!
Or in our component part at Betsy Chevron and at DiscGrinder, respectively.
Yeah. Well, it's not my full name, it's at DiscGrinder. Okay. At DiscGrinder, respectively, was somebody else.
Yeah, that was already taken. And
we're on fucking Facebook now as well, to my disgust.
Well, how would you know you're not on there? Which is BinRoseWright Podcast. You can find us on Facebook.
Mm.
And we're on iTunes as well.
Yeah.
And
we're going to be doing a load of, due to huge demand from me, we're going to be doing a lot more pictures for the whole Doctor Who, a lot more bloggage, and we have enabled comments on the Bin Rowe Was Right blog. So, but what we would suggest is that if you want to comment, be nice.
And if you don't want to be nice, you can email us at binrowwasright@gmail.com.
Or fuck off.
You know, I played you that track, Time Travel Lady by the Wizards of the Light.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah, I think I might drop that into this episode.
I think we very much should.
Do you think we should give them a plug if we do?
Definitely. Who are they? Where did it come from? How long have they been together?
I don't know about their personal lives, but...
Well, sure.
But yeah, so we might use a track by the Wizards of the Light called Time Travel Lady on this. And if we do, I'll put a link in the show notes to the excellent video that goes along with it.
Yeah, and just to lead into that, should we kind of describe what kind of music it is? I mean, you'll find out shortly, but I like the
way
you...
I don't think we need to.
No, let's make that a surprise.